Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I run SAB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder how to join us. We have a talk guest every Thursday night starting 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either join us on the phone, just dial 724-444-7444. Just follow the directions, and the call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the Talk Show website at www.talkshow.com and search for call ID 17702. And if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall at gmail.com. Also, if you need to reach me via Skype, my Skype ID is FranzGames. FranzGames. Let you know I'm not on there very often, but I will be happy to respond. And of course, there is the Twitter. And my account there is actually Paul Franz. So to find me on Twitter, just go to twitter.com/PaulFranz. It's PaulFranz. And of course, I have a secondary account called Franz Game where I announce this podcast and various news and client updates. And of course, this lovely talk cast gets turned into a podcast available on iTunes and Google Play Store and other feeds around the net. Some quick news from ADB from this past week. Looks like most people are, well, recovering. Looks like the whole crew got the flu. And they're recovering, so not much work got done except for recovering. though Steve Cole did communicate with some of the Shapeways sculptors to keep them going, which is always good because got to keep the juices flowing. And Steve Petrick actually got some work done on the Zindi and Gorn Master Starship books, which is always good to hear. Gene was busy, you know, managing Facebook and Twitter and actually had to get a new computer because hers, well, it died. Which is definitely puts a damper on getting things done. So, you know, and then also she mentions that she did actually spend a lot of time with her brother, which is always good to see. You know, family and all. Going forward to SAB Online tournaments, we have the Rat 47 tournament run by Bill Scheller, which is still not quite done. Still have the finals yet to play, and they have yet to play it. So hopefully we will get that done ASAP, and hopefully they'll announce it beforehand so we can all join in watching the finals, which is always interesting, which is going to be Clayton Kruger versus Paul Graves. Also, just notice that Paul Graves actually renewed his subscription for another year. Always a good thing when you're in the finals. Moving on to the Platinum Hat Tournament. Also run by Bill Scheller. Man, that's kind of weird. And the only thing that's actually gone forward in that is actually there's another game that has been completed around two. Round three, round one, I'm still waiting for three games to get played, and one of those is my opponent. Guys, come on, please. Get them done so I can play. I want to play. Moving forward to the online client stuff. Only thing that I got done with the online client is I actually added a quick feature, which I plan on releasing this weekend. And that is support for more of a generic shuttles. You know, the MSS shuttle, I think a prospecting shuttle. Different shuttles which are pretty much generic to all empires, and so that all the person needs to do is specify, okay, here's the counter, and then move on. And I'm gonna put that in so that we can quickly have those shuttles available to a lot more empires in the SAB Online clan. Those that are purely based in the library and not actually installed within the client itself. Moving forward to the library, well, actually, there's been no progress. Most of the quote-unquote progress for this week has been that Frank has been working on updating the feds so they look nicer, so that, you know, improving the images that actually are up there on and included in the library. Hopefully we can continue to work on that. But more importantly, I'm hoping to get the conversions completed because we're up to 71.2%. I'd like to see that close to 100, if not at 100. And if not at 100, I'll work on those things myself if the images are available. That's the, sometimes the slowdown is getting some of the images from Steve Cole. So with that, that is the news for this week. And it's me, yes, the one, the only, the Paul Franz, welcoming you to the Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, it's me, we got Barry, we got MG Lawson, we got a quorum. This is what I think we have, which is always good to have. Just ideas come together, and we need to, so we can chat about our favorite game, SFB or FedCom, or just any games related to ADB. There are many wonderful things that we can talk about. And tonight, the topic for tonight is Stream of Thought. Okay. I'll be honest. I couldn't pick up a topic for tonight. So it's like, okay, you're going to hear me pontificate or talk about whatever. I feel like talking about, and it's not gonna, I'm not going to be limited by a single topic for this evening, but I definitely will. The only thing that I will try to limit it to, obviously, is the Starfleet universe and how it's related to whether it is like SFB Online or Starfleet Warlord, or does SFB in general, or Federation Commander in general, or even one thing which I'm really excited about, Starfleet Marines, which it's one of those games I don't get to play. But I really want to play. And that's one of those reasons why I was thinking about, like, you know, if I could finish up the client to the degree where I can get that so we can play Starfleet Marines across the internet, that'd be great. You know? Obviously, I could use Vassal or one of those platforms themselves. That would be fine. But the issue with that, obviously, is another one. I still got to find someone to play with. Who also could install Vassal and also install any plugin that I create for Vassal. You know, and if I try to use, what's the other, I forget what it is. Dang on it, it's been a while. There's a Windows Cyberboard, that's it. That's what I'm thinking. Yes, MG, actually, I'm pretty sure you can hear me. I'm assuming Barry can hear me because he hasn't disappeared. If you're on a laptop, you should hear me. If you're not hearing me and you're on a tablet device, that's the problem. sorry. And new Skype client, I can't have you join, you know, have you log in to Skype and contact me that way, because I don't know if there's a way of actually adding people to a Skype call these days. But anyhow, you know, so that's always going to be an issue for Starfleet Marines, is finding someone else to play against. But I figure if I can do it with the SFB Online client, maybe I can find someone who already knows it, you know, that's in that universe. Okay, well, and moving forward, might as well start off with talking to Barry. How you doing, man?
There.
Staying out of trouble?
How are you doing?
Good, I'm doing good.
Yeah, sort of driving home from job site. Just across the Pennsylvania line.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be home soon.
Cool.
Wow.
That's new and different.
Well, not for long. I get on a plane Saturday.
Okay, well, that's why I'm used to you. Driving home from work, and it's like, okay, I'm coming from a client site. I'll be home at my hotel in just a little bit.
Yeah. I think this will be the third or fourth night this year I'm actually sleeping in my own bed at home.
Well, it's still early in the year.
I know.
So if this was June and you said that, then that would be interesting.
Yeah.
I understand it's only been four nights in the past month. You know, so.
Yeah. So, Marines. So.
Yep.
Now, is Starfleet Marines just boarding actions, or are they more more things that would be traditional army type actions?
It's more traditional army type actions, actually. In that, basically, you've got an actual a tactical map of, you know, of the area, you know, with, you know, the city being, you know, represented. Well, a small town could be represented by a single hex. I say it could be represented by multiple hexes, which actually is one thing that when it comes to stuff with Marines, that's one of the things that I think really could grow. Now, obviously, the biggest issue is going to be how many people currently own Starfleet Marines. Because what I'm thinking about is one of the great things that you could do expansion-wise when it comes to Starfleet Marines is actually adding new board types. Because that's the big thing, is that currently they have these beautiful maps, and who is it? Xavier, I think it is. Xavier. I think he's the one who designed the original map for Starfleet Marines. And, you know, you have different things that are on that map, from the current ones that are in there have things like there's a town hex in it, and roads and hills and things like that, where the actual troops move around. The idea is that a single counter represents like a squad. So it's not like a single counter does not represent a single guy. That's why a lot of those things related to a Gorn versus a human versus a Klingon versus some other race really is taken into account. It's genericized since it's on the squad level. It just means, okay, a squad for a Gorn squad might be three Gorns versus a human squad, which is six humans. You know, and they're approximately the same strength, same defensive potentials, and all that. And that's the level that you deal with it on the map itself.
So, how much physical distance are we talking about for X?
That's the one thing I can't tell you because I don't remember off the top of my head. I'd have to grab the rules, which are downstairs in the basement at the moment. But invariably, a turn, I'm thinking about this, doesn't involve that much movement. Actually, that's not even really, that's a bad judgment, really, you think about it. And that is that the, a turn, it all depends on what a turn represents when it comes to time, on how fast, on how much distance is represented by a single hex. Really. And if I recall correctly, I have to remember if you can actually stack individual units. I forget. It's been a while since I looked at the rules. But I know for a fact it's like... I was trying to relate it to other games, but that doesn't relate much. Which is that you can't have an enemy unit within the same hex as you. Ah, I know what it does. Okay. Federation Empire. You can't do that in Federation Empire.
So Starfleet Marines, you could have enemy troops in the same hex with you.
Mm-hmm. MG Lawson, good to hear that. You can hear it now. But, you know, it's a tactical board game for those kind of units, from engineering squads to combat squads, commando to there's tanks I was going to say artillery, but they don't have artillery, per se.
No artillery?
Well, okay. They have artillery, but it's that kind of strange Star Trek-type artillery. I.e., the what you do... Yeah, well, artillery's off-map, but also it can come down from orbit. In that, basically what they do is they transport the munition into the, they transport right into the middle of the sky and boom, it comes down raining from the sky. So it's kind of a weird kind of artillery, which is understandable, given the context. Yeah. But there are armored units.
Now, I remember in one original series episode, Kirk was actually using a mortar.
Are you talking about the one with the Gorn?
Yes.
Yes. Which actually was a handmade mortar, which was interesting by itself because he basically made gunpowder. I
Alcestis 3.
Okay.
At the very beginning of the episode, they went down there with a landing party, and that landing party skirmished with the Gorns. Although the Gorns were off screen at that point,
right?
And Kirk found a mortar, set it up, and dropped a. Spherical object into it, which basically is like, okay, we're going to fire this thing off. It's like almost like a nuclear bomb almost in a mortar, about a one-inch sphere. Remember that one?
No, I don't remember that part of it.
It was like in the first 5 minutes of the episode.
Oh, understood. But, you know, it's been a while since I've actually watched that episode. I think that's the issue at this point. Mm-hmm. Oh, understood. I remember most of the individual combat with Kirk being left on the surface to basically fend for himself.
That was 15 minutes into the episode.
Right, exactly. And I remember that part of it. But before that, I don't remember that.
Okay.
Because I don't remember how he gets into that situation, which is... Sounds like the part which you're remembering.
I remember the whole episode. But what happened was that they fought the Gorns, and the Gorns transported their landing parties back up to their ship, and the Gorn ship took off, and the Enterprise beamed up their landing party and took off in pursuit.
Okay. Then they left Kirk behind?
They beamed Kirk up, and the Enterprise was chasing the Gorn ship at high warp speed, and all of a sudden they got stopped in mid-space. Both ships dropped out of warp, and Kirk and the Gorn captain were beamed to this planet, like, okay, you guys are obviously going to fight, so... Here you go.
Kind of
your
the whole thing of the Masters.
Yeah. Yeah, and they basically gave him an incentive. They said, whichever side loses, your species will get wiped out. Because a war is going to basically destroy both species or blow them both back to the Stone Age. So we don't want that. So whichever one's weaker doesn't.
Deserve to live, so that's fun.
And then Kirk found another solution.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Always a good thing to come up with So you don't have the possibility of being wiped out. I like that idea.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah, that's one of the things that obviously it's not represented greatly in Star Trek, though. As you mentioned on that episode, that's one of the few planet side actions that are represented. Now, obviously, Starfleet Marines, the whole idea is to have a little more long range in that. Though, one thing I would love to see, and I'm not sure this is doable, because currently the thing with Starfleet Marines is that it is squad based. So to have a larger battle on a planet, here's the one thing that I don't know about the Starfleet universe, and that is, how do they handle larger battles? Do they have actually larger tactical engagements? You know, or are they smaller engagements because of larger engagements are not really realistic, because one person can just bring in a starship from orbit and just start bombarding, you know, any planet side forces.
Well, if you've got a mortar that can fire a gram or two of antimatter, which basically means that you've got a mortar that can be hand carried and has the destructive power of a nuclear bombs, then all of a sudden any large units are going to get wiped out pretty quick. One soldier carries enough firepower to take out 1,000 enemy soldiers with a single shot.
Right.
When you're dealing with that guy. And in the Starfleet universe, guns that size should be available. Hence why I asked about artillery in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the other thing is, you know, in the cover artwork that I have seen, it looks like these guys are running around basically wearing the same uniform that is used on board ship, but they're not in armor suits.
Right.
Powered armor would be the way to go.
Starship Trooper.
Well, yeah.
The original books. From, geez, who wrote the original books?
Heinlein.
I thought it was Heinlein, but I wasn't 100% positive on that. But yeah, because I remember reading the books, and actually, I had a copy of the original game from Avalon Hill. You know,
yeah.
This is when the whole idea of a tactical nuke was an option. It's like, no, tactical nukes are not an action. That's not a real thing. You can't have tactical nuclear weapons are not a tactical weapon. They are a strategic weapon.
That's how small you can make them.
Well, they're still very blunt force. You know, when
so's artillery. And we use that.
It's not. It's not nearly as a blunt of an instrument. Because, come on, an atomic bomb can wipe out a city. So,
how small can you make one?
Well, how small can you have the reaction? Yeah. But it's not just the wiping away of the city, because then you have to also the issue with the radiation that occurs from it, and the basically the poisoning of the land right there. Now, when it comes to
you can make weapons of that same magnitude, say base it on antimatter, where yeah, there's a radiation burst, but fairly minimal compared to just the pure energy release. And that would actually, you know, you have something that, you know, a half scramble, half matter. You can dial up the damage level pretty accurately on something like that.
Agreed. But at the same time, you have all this destruction. And my understanding at the moment when it comes to Starfleet Marines and why you sent in troops at all to a planet is mainly because of you want to minimize the destruction of what's there. You know?
Okay.
Because there's resources there, whether it's resources or actual, you know, like gold or the lithium or iron or whatever, which are needed to what? To build spaceships. Or possibly even the population. That's one of the things that you want to preserve, you know. And that's another reason why you don't want to have these larger weapons, you know. But that's what it comes down to, is that you've got the question is, when does a tactical weapon become a strategic one? Is it, and most of, in my mind, it's mainly about the amount of damage that it can cause. Because I said, if you can wipe out a whole city, you know, with a single bomb, why? You know, currently, the United States did that the one time, or actually twice. Yeah, twice. For the second time, just to prove that the first time wasn't a fluke. But the whole idea was the forced surrender of Japan. Now, of course, there is the whole, if you want to get down to it, there's the whole moral thing, which is repugnant to a certain degree of what the United States did, which was the killing of civilians, basically, to force the surrender of Japan.
Well, actually, if you think about it, at that point, we were sending in bombers every night, and those bombers were carpet bombing entire cities as using conventional weapons, and a whole fleet of B-29s, I think they were, our heavy bombers, would go in and hit the Japanese city every night and do about the same damage, you know, and you'd have 100 to 200 of these aircraft come in and do about the same amount of damage as a single aircraft with one atomic bomb. It was incomparable. So we were basically wiping out a city every day.
Understood. One thing MG Lawson was mentioning in the chat room is that he thinks in the Honorverse universe, basically if a fleet achieves low orbit at a planet, the battle's over since it could level every city. And he just imagine that the same thing could happen in the SCP universe. And I agree. But the question is, if you do destroy every city, what are you losing?
Well, the other thing is that from orbit, you can use the Starship can launch in the Honorverse. They had Qs or KEWs, kinetic energy weapon, which was essentially a small projectile, you know, maybe a half a pound, coming in at fractional percentage
of light, yes.
Yeah. And basically you could dial those things down to however small you wanted to make it. And, you know, it could have, same amount of damage output as a ton of TNT up to a city burner. Very, very pinpoint strategic or tactical weapon, if need be, or you could do a lot of damage.
Mm-hmm.
Which, yeah. There ain't no running, there ain't no hiding. It's just, they decide to take you out, you're gone.
Mm-hmm. Oh, understood. Understood. And that, oh, that becomes a real issue. If you really think about it, is that, okay, if any empire can do that to their enemies, heck, do that to their own citizens. Because if they're, if okay, so a planet wants to secede from the empire and go, you know, we want to be by ourselves. You know, we don't longer want your protection or anything like that, which in a lot of cases is kind of silly. Because you, unless you have a large fleet yourself, you know, you're going to need protection from your enemies. Can't really go it alone. The, you know, the empire could just come in and go, okay, fine, and wipe you out. You know, instead of using diplomacy in any way, shape, or form to actually encourage you to come back into the empire or stay with the empire, you know, because there's only so many times that the question is, obviously, is that would you run an empire using just pure fear at that point? Fear, in my mind, only works for so long. At a certain point, people get tired of being afraid.
Yeah.
And so they figure out another way of handling it, you know. So. But anyway, you know.
At a certain point, people say there's nothing left to lose. What the heck?
Right. Exactly. You know, they'll become martyrs to the cause. You know, because there's always the thing which is, I will die for a cause I believe in that's greater than myself. I will die for everybody else. If I can stop this, if I can save those people, I will do that. Yeah.
Now you're touching on issues that are very current day.
Come on. Let's think about it. Star Trek, at least the original series, in my mind, has always been about issues of the day. Just put in a different...
Yes, it was.
Just a different background. That's all. And it could really be very relatable to the issues of the day. And that,
right.
There was a reason for that. And Lord knows that's, Star Trek is not the only series to ever do that. They'll do that today, where they'll bring up issues that were in the you know, they'll kind of schedule into an episode for the like next year of what issues that had occurred in the past months, you know.
Yeah.
Kind of have a, what's the term I was looking for? Definitely wasn't retrospective. It was opinion on it, you know. The show, you know, what's happening, basically, you know, show the right and wrong of it all, you know.
Yeah.
So. And so, you know, so everything that as Solomon himself would say, there's nothing new under the sun, and that is true. Because all it is the tools that are used to implement said thing. You know,
yeah.
people can do awful things to other people. You know, for most part, we're always at war with each other to a certain degree. The big question is, what are the tools that they use to fight? Is it a knife, a sword, a rifle, words? Because that's the whole idea of a political debate overall, is you might be doing battle, but you're doing battle with words. So that is the forum that you've selected.
Yeah.
It's still battle. It can be definitely turn can be seen in that regard. You know, but that's, you know, the understanding is that more civilized society would put away the tools of war, the blunt instruments of war, and use discourse as the weapons.
Well, yeah, but keep in mind that all diplomacy is eventually has to be backed up by some means of force.
Possibly. Or at least the threat of force in some cases.
Yeah.
Understood. Oh, I understand that at the moment, yes.
Okay.
I still remember that one Star Trek episode where, you know, they had these quote unquote battles where the whole idea was that
with the disintegrators,
where the battles were done purely using the computer, and then the computer would decide what's the casualties from this past war, and then people would walk into the disintegrators and they would die.
Yeah.
You know, and Kirk did something he should not have done, because the whole idea of non-interference, that's part of what was, you know, the Federation's mantra, which is non-interference. And he decided, nope. You know, he went in and said, no, okay, you guys want to kill each other? Fine. Kill the computer. Now, you got two choices. You can either pick up your swords, you know, pick up your weapons and go at it face to face, or work on a peaceful resolution to this war.
Yeah. I remember that episode well.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Then the non-interference directive came by a few episodes later.
Yeah. The crazy one about that particular idea is that, you know, it's truly civilized. It's a civilized way of doing war. There's no civilized way of doing war.
No, there isn't.
But in my mind, here's the one thing that I think that we've gotten away from, and this is going to sound weird to some people. The whole idea of using guns and tanks and aircraft to level bombs on people is too antiseptic. And Lord knows, with the drones that are currently being employed, separate ourselves even further from the actuality and the reality of war. Where in the past, where you picked up your sword and you went hand to hand with your foe, you saw him die. You had a real a real moment of realization of what you were doing. No filters, putting on that, you know, we can distance ourselves from the act of violence that we are doing, that we're causing. We were there face to face, you know, sword against shield.
Well, if you want author that writes books that deal with that very same subject. Read stuff by David Weber.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
He goes into the very same issues.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Wow, but sorry, went off on a little, might have been a bit of a tangent there, but we're talking about war here and you know that kind of combat, and in the Starfleet universe, you know, the whole idea there, really, if you think about it, is how far do they let it go? You know, what is the point where they go, you know, we agreed to it this far, we have a reason to actually have people on the ground. When does it escalate to the point where, okay, you know, we don't want anyone on the ground, anyone from our side that could possibly get hurt, you know, because it's just going to basically, we have a limited number of people, you know, in our empire that actually can fight. Because it's just like anything else, it's a limited resource. You know, even though we have people, you know, living in, you know, growing up and so forth, that it takes a while. You know, if you think about the Star Wars universe, the whole idea of the clones for that period of time was to quickly create troops.
Right.
In a limited amount of time, instead of having to wait for 20 to, you know, like 20 years to have a fully grown human.
Yeah.
You know? They could do it in like 5 or you know, which was an interesting idea.
I got a question.
Yeah.
Second generation X ships. When is that module ever coming out? Do we know what's going to be in it?
It's still up in the air. From the blog and what Steve Cole and I think the discussion board where Steve Cole has posted what the goals are for the year. I don't think I saw X2 mentioned at all. Now,
okay,
it wasn't explicitly mentioned. I think there was a mention of an SFB module, which could pay for all we know. It is X2, and as I think we've talked about before, and that is that the Zerkalians, they decided that it's going to be separate from X2.
Okay.
At least that's my understanding at this point. Because I think the original thought, at this point multiple years ago, is that it would be together. You know, the whole idea of the Zerkalians, you know, would be the Zerkalian invasion. You know, part of that would be the second generation X ships, because that's who would actually be fighting the Zerkalians. You know. So in that case, the question is, what comes first, the chicken or the egg? I.e., do the Zerkalians come first or the X2 ships comes first? My guess is the X2, if they're actually going to do it in a certain order. Now, was it you or somebody else that mentioned that one thing they'd like to see is actually a republishing of the X1 module with all the updates?
Okay.
You know, the cleaning up, including the SSDs and all that kind of thing. Which, let me see if I can find that. Which is, because I could have sworn there was something along the line, that lines, but not Is that the one? No, that's not the one. That's always cool. The module C3A Andromeda threat file. It's always cool. I got to look to see if I have. Let me look at this for a moment. Look at the front. I think I have that. I got to look at that. Module C6. Lost Empires. I'm pretty sure I got a copy, which, if that's the case, I need to do a little work. Ah, yes. Module R107, then the Kozians. Okay, so was it that one? Because I'm looking, I could have sworn there was a module. Okay, we have module X ships, which, right. Da-da-da. I don't see anything. Because I could have sworn there was a module X1R. What was that, a module, or was that a rule book? There it is. Ah, that's what it is. It was actually X1R is actually X ships reinforcements. So basically, it's more of the ships. That's what that's what it is. Okay, I thought X1R was like the revision. Okay, the description was that it has five new X ships, partial X refits. I always hated those things. And new X weapons, so particle cannon, web breaker, all that kind of thing. Yeah, because that's one thing with the X ships, the first generation X ships, that I disliked to the nth degree. But I understand why they were necessary, which is the whole concept of a partial refit, where you took a general warship and you added certain X technologies to the ship. And I understand that.
I gotta go.
Okay.
Phone call coming in.
Okay, okay.
Bye.
Well, you have a good night. So I'll continue on that thread, which was that I understand why you'd want to have the X1 ships and how the X1 and have those partial refits, because of what you're doing is you're experimenting with this X technology. And this is, to me, this is, partial X refits, I think, should be like a normal refit. It's possible that's the case, and I need to buy the cabin's module X1R. It is possible. Of course, I have to check to see if I might already have it. Gotta double check these things. It's been a while since I've bought a captain's module. And that is that, in my mind, if you're actually refitting ships, I mean, and this is not on an experimental basis, as in a test platform, you have these partial refits, but they're consistent across your, not, I was going to say ships, type of ship, like the CA gets this, this, and this. And because I'm sorry, in combat, you want to know what abilities are for a ship that you send. Now, when it comes to the X1 technology, obviously you have certain test platforms that you have to test out this new technology. But you don't normally add them to combat situations. You know, just, we'll just add it here and see how it works. No, you know, to a certain degree, yes, you would do that. You would actually test out that platform, but the question is, how often would you actually put them into ships just to see how they do in combat? How much do they improve things in combat? You know, I'm not, how often would you do such a thing? You know? Bear, you back?
I'm back.
Short call, huh?
What's that?
Short call, huh?
Yeah, it's just my wife. She got her cell phone that died, and she turned it back on. Said, "Oh, Barry's calling." So told her I'll be home in less than a half hour. So
okay,
and I get to spend a whole week with her in no cell and no email.
Cool.
And I am not going to. If they have internet there, I am going to do my best. Oh, well, I can't connect to it.
Yeah, understood. I have my team lead. Yeah. He went on vacation and he said, I have no internet. I have my no cell phone. We're out in like the Banks, you know, down in South Carolina, the Outer Banks. Yeah. And he said, basically, there's nothing there. You know, you need to contact. There's no way to contact me. Good luck. God be with you. Because if anything happens, you can contact me. Yeah. But I understand the whole concept. Because Lord knows when I went, was it my 15-year anniversary? Lord have mercy. That was 10 years ago. They and I went down to Jamaica. To Negril. And
yeah,
that's before smartphones were really a thing. The closest thing to a smartphone was the Blackberries, and which were
yeah.
Basically there were smartphones, but not the current generation. Where we currently almost expect that anywhere we go, we have access to the internet. You know, before that time. So it wasn't that big of a deal not to have access to phone calls, you know. That's when we went to for our anniversary trip, we basically turned off our cell phones.
Yeah,
and I did not turn my cell phone back on until I was back in the United States. In fact, I think I finally turned it back on when I was actually in the Philadelphia airport.
Oh, wow.
So, and of course, this was 10 years ago. At this point, yeah, it's coming up on 11 years. So, it's been quite a while. And you know, in the past 10 years, a lot of things have changed when it comes to the way we use our phones.
Oh, I know. But the thing I want is to avoid having my wife do an email,
mm-hmm.
texting.
Oh, yeah. Oh, understood. But we have, of course, that some people, I'm not one of those people. At least I don't think I'm one of those people. Who can't just put down the crack pipe, you know, escape from email. Don't look at it. Don't care about it. Don't care about someone trying to call me. I'm able, if I want to, I can turn off my phone for an hour. If I'm at church, you know, I usually just mute it. But in theory, I could probably turn it off and I wouldn't care. Because nothing is going to happen in an hour in a mass that can't wait for an hour. Obviously, if let's say the worst thing, Data gets in an accident, and so I want to be there at the hospital. When I'm there at the hospital,
right,
won't really make that big of a difference. If let's say, I don't have this worry anymore. Actually, if her parents dies while that happens, will an hour matter? No, it won't. There's not much that can happen in the world where an hour matters to a certain degree, you know. But for the most part, it doesn't matter.
Yes. That I did get two-player games that I'm breaking.
Awesome. Which ones did you grab?
Onitoba.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you saw that one.
No, I did not.
That new guy there, Dan,
mm-hmm.
showed it to me. Two-player game. Folds really flat. It's really nice. Setup time is about 30 seconds. Playing time is 5 to 10 minutes.
Oh, sounds
and
good.
And put-away time is another 30 seconds.
Right. Sounds like a card game.
It's kind of like a cross between a card game and chess.
Hmm?
And the other one was Seven Wonders Duel.
Ah, okay. I saw that.
Yeah. And then I'm bringing Puerto Rico just in case. Well, you never know. You know, we're going to be there a week.
Yeah.
We may run into some people.
Oh, yeah. Agreed. I still remember that time I played Peter Bakia in Council of Five Nations a couple of years back. Actually, a year and a half.
I was there. We played a three-player game in Puerto Rico, and between setup and teardown and playing the game, what, 40 minutes?
Yeah, it was the fastest game we've ever played in, period.
Yeah.
It's like boom, 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 because we had to because Peter had another game to play.
Yeah.
And we were able to kind of sneak it in, and of course, what happens? He wins.
Well, I don't mind. We all won. We played a game in Puerto Rico.
Oh, I agree. I'm not saying that is a bad thing at all. You know that he didn't deserve to win. Just kind of commenting on it.
Oh, what you missed from Gamers and Winner?
Mm-hmm.
I won my first ever game of Twilight Imperium.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah. Of course, Eric wasn't there.
That's true. Because Eric invariably wins that. Jeez.
Rich was. He ran into. Every now and then, I have the luckiest dice in the world. I'm sure you've seen that.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what it is, but, you know, maybe it's some psychic ability, but every now and then, just dice, I cannot. You know, like, I could take a Federation frigate up against a B-10 and blow your doors off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you'll be rolling all ones, and I'll be rolling all sixes. Or is it the other way around?
When it comes to Quiet Imperium, don't ask me, because I have not played the game.
I'm talking about Starfleet Battles!
Well, Starfleet Battles, you want to most of the time you want to roll ones.
Yeah. Okay. So I'd be rolling all ones. The B-10 would be rolling all sixes. Yeah, I guess we could take the Atlas just as phasers, but maybe a frigate would do it. But
mm-hmm.
Certainly a cruiser could.
Understood. Yes.
maybe a battle cruiser.
Oy. Gotta love that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
because I know that's happened more than once. Definitely, I've seen it happen, like in some of the tournament games where you see the comment. Okay, see ya, MG. You have a good night. You've seen it where the comment that, you know, the only reason that they're still in the game is because that the other players rolled so poorly.
Because the other player what?
Rolled so poorly. Like they missed with everything or missed with two hellbores at range 4.
Right.
Something, you know, Lord knows when you rely, when I definitely have heard of the whole almost, you know, Burnside maneuver to a certain degree, where you have people, you know, in like the hydrant in tournament play, and they'll come into like range 1. I just need an 11. And they roll snake eyes. They roll 2 sixes. Ducks and has boxcars.
Yeah.
You know? So I was like, when you rely, you know, there's only so much you can actually rely on when it comes to luck. The percentages. You got the percentages that say, oh, I should win. Yeah. But like anything else, you have to play the game.
Yeah.
That's why, like in baseball, you can say, oh yeah, the Yankees should always beat this really bad team, whatever that team is, whether it's the Mets in the past year, or the Philadelphia Phillies. You know, in theory they should beat them, but you never know. The Yankees could be overconfident. The Yankees could just have a bad night, you know?
Right.
You know, and the Philadelphia Phillies, which might be the worst team in the league, win. You know? But, yeah.
Stranger things have happened.
Oh, agreed. Yeah, that was... Dang it. I'm thinking about... Just made me think about a kind of famous umpire died this past month. I forget the guy's name, but basically they would refer to him as God because he was that good. He was very fair about his calls and his umpiring. But he was very strict about, okay, this is the way we play. This reminds me of and I read his book called They Call Me God. A while ago now. But the one thing that he mentioned was that he's never, you know, he calls call a ball, a strike. This is the way you call them. He said there's only one time that. Basically, what he did was it was for a game that it didn't matter for either side. They're playing it because they're required to play it. You know, both of them were knocked out of any possible contention. It was that in the late, you know, the late, really late in the season. So he said, "Look," brought both teams together. Said, "Look, here's the deal. We want to get this game over as quickly as possible. So this is what we're going to do. Here, this is a ball is going to be, a strike is going from here to here, basically two inches outside the plate." And you know, and he said, "And that's the way I'm going to call it for the whole night. This is to let you know that on both sides, that's the way I'm going to be calling it." Now, here's the thing: is this something that he could have done today? Probably not. I don't think he could get away with it because of all of, you know, the reviews for the umpires that occur because of everything's recorded and all that kind of thing. You couldn't get away with it today.
Right.
But they got the ball game got done in like less than 2 hours. They were done.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure everyone had a good time, you know. And it was a fair ball. It was a fair game. It just meant that the strike zone was a little larger.
Right. So it was over faster.
Right. Right. Exactly. Right. Exactly. A lot more strikeouts.
Can we say a pitcher's game?
Yep. Definitely a pitcher's game in that case. And come on, when it comes to baseball, you there's one thing that they keep records and stats on everybody, including the umpires. And one of those things that they record when it comes to the umpires. Are they pitcher friendly or batter friendly? And the big question with those is going to be, they're trying to automate as much as possible, you know, have the having the reviews so that they get the calls right and all this. Now, obviously there is some calls for an automated, you know, way of calling balls and strikes. Now, there's one thing that was mentioned about that was, you know, that I definitely thought about. I was like, yeah, they could do that. They're still going to need an umpire behind the plate for one basic reason. Who's going to call home plate? The plays that happen at home plate, who's going to call them? Especially because, let's say someone steals home. Who's going to call who's out or safe? Well, that's why you can automate that thing. So all the umpire's doing is calling balls and strikes according to what the machine says. But the umpire still has to be there. So.
Yeah.
So, anyhow, I think with that, we are going to wrap up this evening. Barry, it's been a pleasure talking to you.
Same here. I will see you in 2 weeks.
What's happening?
Or I will talk to you in 2 weeks.
Okay, you'll talk to me in 2 weeks. Okay. For a moment, I was like, okay, are we getting together somehow? And I didn't know. I forgot.
I guess at some point we need to start talking about games this summer and Council of Five Nations here.
Correct. To me, the Council of Five Nations, which is not until October, I really can't even discuss it until June.
Okay.
The only reason is because I have no clue what's going to be happening in October. I have no clue.
I have no clue either. All I know is that I heard the first rumors today of upcoming projects for one of our main customers.
Mm-hmm.
These are those long-term commissioning jobs.
Uh-huh.
One is in Fresno. The other is in Utah.
Wow.
So I volunteered for both of them, hoping that, you know, maybe one will come through.
What happens if both come through?
Well, I'll get either one or the other.
Right.
And I don't care, and I might go back and forth between the two, but I would basically be either in Utah or Fresno until Christmas.
Wow.
Yeah, fly back home every now and then, but...
Understood. Well, in the meantime, you have a good night.
You too.
Okay. Bye. So we had a nice little discussion there about Starfleet Marines and the whole idea of ground combat and the use of it. Lord knows in the Starfleet universe, you know, how the limitations on that. How far does it go? Really, how far does it go? How far would the empires actually let it go? You know, before they said, nope, that's it. You know, the force is large enough that we just gonna bring a starship in the orbit and just bomb it from orbit. You know. That kind of thing, you know, it's the only way to be safe. But you know, I know there's certain situations which you need armed forces. That's going to be the only way it's going to work. And of course, some discussion there of the X-1 ships and the future modules recipe, which should be interesting to see what happens. I would really like to see a redo of the X1 module, which would be great, I think. But more importantly, I think a lot of people would be really excited to see X2. I'd really be interested to see those Arcalians. But actually, what I really want more than anything else is the Tholian M81 module. That is what I see. Or even I'll come back just a little bit, and I would love to see the redo of GURPS, of the GURPS module, which Gene's been working on for around at least 6 months, if not the past year, on and off. She hasn't really been focused on it, so and trying to get it all out. It's kind of part of what she's doing on a daily basis. So she's only able to focus on just that, like Steve Cole is supposed to be doing. Obviously, everyone's trying to get over the flu. Has been trying to get over the flu in the past couple weeks. So I think Steve Pedrick currently is completely over the flu, but 2 weeks ago he wasn't so lucky. But anyhow, with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.